Well, thank you for that. And it certainly fits as well with our focus on the Old Testament. During our time together yesterday evening and tonight and a little bit tomorrow as well. Indeed, one day in the presence of God and all the blessings that accompany that are so much better than a day and thousands of days in the world. Well, we're going to continue our look tonight at the book of Proverbs as it relates to community, as it relates to healthy relationships. And we'll get the, we're going to go up here. There we go. All right. So turn in your Bibles to Proverbs, although I'm going to have these on the screen as we go through these remaining six principles this evening. I have them on the screen because as you do a thematic study of the book of Proverbs on whatever theme that it is that you might be studying and seeking out in this book, you have to turn a lot. So in order to save you from a lot of page flipping in this particular study, I'll have the Proverbs up on the screen as I did last night. But if you were here last night, you will remember that we began a two-part look at healthy relationships, relationship building, in the book of Proverbs. And I mentioned last night that an essential component of wisdom is the ability to build a faithful friendship. It is a mark of wisdom to be able to relate to others in a way that is God-honoring and is full of faithfulness and love to others around us. That wisdom is defined as skill in living, and that wisdom manifests itself in the ability to relate properly, first and foremost to God, but also to relate towards others, especially those in the community of faith. So naturally, since wisdom is connected to skill, and that skill is connected to living in relationship, then naturally we can expect that someone like Solomon would give us wisdom, truths about how to build healthy relationships. And these principles found in the book of Proverbs are not principles that were related only to the Old Testament community of faith, but we find echoes of these in the New Testament. And even though tonight I'm not going to do these forays into the New Testament to illustrate these things, I'm pretty confident that in a church like this, you'll capture those New Testament echoes of these principles as well. They'll be there. These are not just momentary truths that we're studying from Proverbs. These relate to us today as well. Well, I want to quickly review what we studied yesterday. And the four principles that we looked at are these. When Solomon gives wisdom for building relationships, we can begin with these four truths. Number one, recognize your need for relationships. The man who withdraws, the man who seeks isolation, is the fool in Solomon's eyes. Instead, man is created to be in community. And it's in the context of community that he learns skill for life. Secondly, we notice that Solomon places a big emphasis on choosing friends carefully. Even though man was intended to be in community and to build relationships, Solomon emphasized that quantity is not better than quality. He said, the man of many friends will come to ruin, many superficial friends, fair-weather friends. And instead, he taught those in his context, his own son in particular, but others in the context of faithful Israel. And he teaches us as well that we are to look for faithful friends, those who will bring us along on the path towards God himself. Choose your friends carefully, those who will influence your life. Choose them carefully. Number three, pay attention to your words. Words are the building blocks of healthy relationships, but they can also be the wrecking ball. If we either build solid relationships or tear them down, we do that through our words. And so over and over again, Solomon gives us these proverbs, these pithy sayings to help us remember how important words are in relationships. And we'll look at that a lot more specifically tomorrow morning. And then number four, practice a give and take approach to counsel. This is so important in the formation of healthy relationships, that you're not just giving encouragement or giving counsel. You're not just receiving counsel and encouragement. But what makes a healthy community of faith is that all the members of the body are giving counsel and receiving counsel. And you remember that proverb that Solomon stated, that like iron sharpening iron, so one man sharpens another. And that is certainly to be the case in a healthy church, that there is this constant give and take approach to counsel, giving counsel, receiving counsel, giving counsel with seasoned grace, while at the same time receiving counsel with humility. Well, now we will look at the remaining six principles, and we'll try to go through these quickly. And as we do, you know, if there's ever a time when I go through something rather quickly, I want you to know you can have the slides later. I've left them with Craig already. They're on the flash drive. And if you would like those, you can certainly get them from him, and you'll have the same notes that you see on the screen here. Number five, the fifth truth, the fifth principle for building strong relationships is this: be quick to forgive and to confess. Be quick to forgive and to confess. Now, let's look at the first half of that. It is essential in healthy relationships to forgive. And to forgive not out of a burden, but to be ready and quick to forgive. This is what makes solid relationships. Consider, for example, Proverbs chapter 10, verse 12. Here Solomon states, "Hatred stirs up strife, but love covers all transgressions." Love covers all transgressions. Proverbs 17, verse 9. "He who conceals a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends." And then Proverbs 19, verse 11, "A man's discretion makes him slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook a transgression." Now, what is important to note here is not that Solomon is calling upon us to turn a blind eye to sin. He's not calling on us to ignore the presence of sin, even within the community of faith. That's not what Solomon is doing. When he talks here about covering transgressions, he is speaking specifically about the issuing of forgiveness. To forgive those who specifically have sinned against you. And that's why Solomon says, love covers those transgressions. It is glory, it is dignified, it is honorable to extend this forgiveness at breakneck speed. There is no dignity in holding or withholding forgiveness from those who need it. Now, when we talk about forgiveness, what do we talk about? Jay Adams has come up with a really good three-point summary of what forgiveness means. That when we do extend forgiveness, when we do forgive others for the transgressions that they have caused or committed against us, there are three important things to remember about forgiveness. Number one, forgiveness says this: I will not bring up the matter again to you. That when you have truly forgiven, when you have said, "My love covers this, I forgive you," it means that the matter is done, never to be brought up again at your instigation. Unless, of course, the person falls back into that sin. But if he or she does not, forgiveness means you do not bring that up again. That no longer remains on the list of accounts. Number two, it also means that you will not bring up that matter to another. It means that the process outlined even in a place like Matthew 18, where Jesus gives us the process of admonishing a brother who is caught in a trespass, it means that once there is confession of sin and once you have forgiven that individual, the process stops. It doesn't continue to move up the ladder as you continue to try and find more witnesses to that sin. It stops. And so forgiveness means I will not bring up that matter neither to you nor to others. And then number three, and this is probably the hardest, it means that I will not bring up the matter to myself. It means that we have a strict control of our thoughts and our memories. And that once the person has truly confessed that sin, and once we've forgiven that person for that sin, we don't keep hitting the rewind button and playing it over and over and over again like one of those viral YouTube clips. Instead, we make it our commitment at that point to never bring it up again, so long as, again, that the person has asked for forgiveness and the transgression has stopped. Now, some will say, well, is Solomon advocating here a deceitful approach whereby you would take an approach that would cover the sin and keep it under wraps and make sure that others wouldn't know about it so that there could be this kind of secrecy to the wrongdoing? And that's not what Solomon or the book of Proverbs is advancing here. Let me quote from one commentator who says this: love hides transgressions, not by condoning wrong, but by making allowance and forgiving. It leads a man to cover up not his own faults, and that is condemned elsewhere in chapter 28, verse 13, but to cover up those of others. It's not that you cover up your own faults, but that you cover up those of others. Not in a scheme, not in a scandal, but it is obviously in response to the humble request for forgiveness by the other party. Now, what happens when that forgiveness isn't offered? What happens when forgiveness is withheld? Solomon deals with that as well. When forgiveness is not extended, what happens to the person against whom that sin was committed? If you fail to forgive, if you refuse to forgive, then what do you have? You have that state of offendedness. The failure to forgive results in the state of offendedness. And Solomon deals with the transgressor on this point when he says this in Proverbs 18, verse 19, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a citadel. And you must watch your own attitude and your own memories and your own thoughts on this issue, because as Solomon points out, that once offendedness takes root, it becomes stronger with time, harder to break through. And so that is why Solomon puts such a strong emphasis on the need for forgiveness, immediate forgiveness, quick forgiveness, for that is essential if strong relationships are to be built. Solomon also deals with this reality that there is no place for harboring resentment. There's no place for feeling offended, and certainly no place for seeking revenge against the person who has committed iniquity against you. And he brings this out in Proverbs chapter 20, verse 22. Listen to his words, and this is a truth that you should remember probably from Romans chapter 12 and other places in the New Testament. Proverbs 20, verse 22, do not say, I will repay evil. Wait for the Lord, and He will save you. Now, one of the common things in broken relationships and the refusal to extend forgiveness is this idea that if I forgive, I lose. I have not recouped what was done against me. I've not recouped my honor, or maybe I've not recouped those material possessions, or I've not recouped whatever it is, my reputation that someone destroyed, and so therefore I don't forgive. Therefore, instead, I seek revenge through offendedness, by keeping that iniquity close to my heart, talking about it, bringing it up to others, to the other person, to myself constantly, out of this desire to seek revenge. And Solomon states it very clearly, do not say, I will repay. It is up to the Lord to establish that which was taken from you. You forgive. You extend that mercy. You allow your love to cover the multitude of transgressions that may have been committed against you. And then you leave it in the Lord's hands to recover to you that which may be lost. I like what Burke Parsons says when he says this, if you've experienced God's forgiveness, others will experience yours. Or another statement by Dietrich Bonhoeffer, this one is particularly penetrating. He said this, once a man has experienced the mercy of God in his life, he will henceforth aspire only to serve. The proud throne of the judge no longer lures him. He wants to be down below with the lowly and the needy because that is where God found him. It's a great statement. Also, it's important and essential for healthy relationships not only to be quick to forgive, but also quick to confess. This is the second half of our fifth point. Be quick to forgive and to confess. And this is what Solomon says, or a wise man says in Proverbs 28, verse 13. Proverbs 28, verse 13. He who conceals his transgressions. He who conceals his own transgressions is what the wise man here is saying. He who conceals his own transgressions will not prosper, but he who confesses and forsakes them will find compassion. So notice this is the exact opposite. So if there is a community that is eager to extend forgiveness, then the one who refuses to confess will never prosper there. But if the community is eager to extend forgiveness and he is, and the transgressor is quick to confess, what will he find in that kind of community that already has committed itself to being quick to forgive? The transgressor who is quick to confess will find what? Compassion. He'll find compassion. And this is brought out in James. If there's one book in the New Testament that mirrors and echoes the book of Proverbs more than any other book in the New Testament, it's James's letter, and we find so many themes brought out in James, and this is one of those echoes of the book of Proverbs. James 5, verse 16, therefore, confess your sins to one another and pray for one another so that you may be healed. That is wisdom. Number six, the sixth principle as you seek to build strong and healthy, faithful relationships is this: prioritize listening over speaking. Prioritize listening over speaking. Relationships are never built on quickness of speech, nor on the quantity of words, but they're built on the abundance of listening. We said before that words are indeed the building blocks of healthy relationships. But we have to be careful with that. It's not that you need a ton of bricks to build a small hut. You want the right amount. And building a strong relationship means that your words will be choice words, but they must be used at the right time, and they must be used after an abundance of listening. Consider these proverbs. Solomon says in Proverbs 10, verse 19, when there are many words, transgression is unavoidable. Transgression is unavoidable with many words, but he who restrains his lips is wise. There is no wisdom that comes out in the endless talk of constant discussion, constant speaking. Rather, You must restrain your lips, and when you do that, you will be wise and you will build strong relationships. Proverbs 15, verse 28, Solomon says, "The heart of the righteous ponders how to answer, but the mouth of the wicked pours out evil things." So we all want righteous relationships. We all want to build relationships and be the righteous component in that relationship. That will be shown by a pondering. What does it mean to ponder? It means not to speak first and think later. Rather, pondering means to think first and to listen and then to speak. Proverbs chapter 17, verses 27 to 28. "He who restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool, when he keeps silent, is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is considered prudent." And we all know that in any relationship, there are those tense moments. Now, think of marriage relationships. There are tense moments. But if you're going to build a healthy marriage relationship, it's not going to be based on this hot spirit that just speaks this verbal diarrhea. Rather, it will be a cool spirit that keeps silent and ponders and considers what is the best way to respond in this tense moment. And certainly that goes for all of our friendships. Whenever we come across those tense moments, it's the cool spirit. It's the keeping silent. It is closing lips and considering and pondering how to answer. Proverbs 18, verse 13. "He who gives an answer before he hears, it is folly and shame to him." He who gives an answer before he hears. And how often do we not do that? And how often does that not strain relationships? We don't even allow the person to finish the question. We don't even allow the person to even speak the question, and we've already got the answer formulated. Or at the very least, we just don't listen to the end of the question. We're already just wondering how to word our response. Proverbs 18, verse 17, "The first to plead his case seems right until another comes and examines him." Now here in Proverbs 18, verse 17, Solomon is dealing with a situation where you have three parties. And this often happens in relationships as well. Somebody comes to you about someone else, about a concern, about an issue. And Solomon is raising the point that you are not in a position to offer any final judgment or answer if you've just heard one side of the story. It's foolish to base a judgment on one side of the story. You have to listen to both. The first to plead his case will seem right. We've all been there. How many times has that not happened? We've heard it. You know, our kids especially will come up and so has done something against me. And well, you know, yeah, you're right. And then only later on we find out that, well, that's not the whole story. The other side provides perspective. And Solomon calls us to exercise skill, to listen, to be there to hear one side and to hear the other, and then to render judgment or to render a decision. Proverbs 25, verse 11, "Like apples of gold and settings of silver is a word spoken in right circumstances." Now, these apples of gold are not necessarily in abundance. They're strategically placed. Notice, they are placed in settings of silver. In other words, there's plurality of silverware there. There's much silver, and that silver, we know, is of lesser value. But the wise man places that apple of gold at the very right place and gives that whole conversation, that whole relationship, that whole dialogue, a sense of beauty by how he responds. Or consider Proverbs 29, verse 20. "Do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him." Do you see a man who is hasty in his words? There is more hope for a fool than for him. Again, another quote from Dietrich Bonhoeffer here, who in his book Life Together speaks on many of these issues. He says this about the need for listening. Quote, "The beginning of love for the brethren is learning to listen to them. Many people are looking for an ear that will listen. They do not find it among Christians because these Christians are talking when they should be listening. But he who can no longer listen to his brother will soon no longer be listening to God either. He will be doing nothing but prattle in the presence of God too. Christians have forgotten that the ministry of listening has been committed to them by him who is himself the great listener and whose work they should share. We should listen with the ears of God that we may speak the word of God." Number seven, the seventh principle as we survey the book of Proverbs about relationships is a very, very practical one. And when we go through some of these Proverbs, we're going to laugh a little because on the one hand, well, the wording is even funny on some of these. We all recognize this is very, very true. Solomon emphasizes that for relationships to be healthy, it requires this commitment not to be overbearing. What does it mean to be overbearing? Let me summarize it this way. To be overbearing is to have a selfish disregard for others. That's what it means to be overbearing. You have a selfish disregard for others. The friendships that you have are for you, and you completely or at least partially disregard the needs and the state of others. Now, this can happen in several ways. One of the ways is this. We invade others' privacy and consume their time. That's one way to be overbearing. We invade others' privacy without invitation, and we just consume their time. Consider some of these Proverbs. Proverbs 25, verse 17. "Let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, or he will become weary of you and hate you." Solomon recognized a reality that consuming someone else's time is selfish, and it results not in a stronger relationship, but actually in hatred. "Let your foot rarely be in your neighbor's house, or he will become weary of you and hate you." And the idea behind this is stop just inviting yourself over all the time. Wait for the invitations. Wait for the invitations. Familiarity does breed contempt, and too much of a good thing can be harmful in relationships. Instead, consider what the connection is of this proverb in 25 verse 17 to the proverb just before it, as Solomon deals with the idea of overabundance, of excess. Proverbs 25 verse 16, the very preceding proverb to the one that we just read in verse 17 says this, "Have you found honey?" Everyone would say honey is a good thing. "Have you found honey? Eat only what you need, that you not have it in excess and vomit it." And then he follows right on that one with not being too often in your neighbor's house. And the idea is your neighbor will vomit you. So make sure that you do not consume the privacy and the time of others. Here's a quotation from Bruce Waltke, a very well-known commentator on Proverbs. He said this, "Friendship ripens through discreet sensitivity, not to intrude on privacy, and to allow space for the other person to be a person in his own right. Not through self-enjoyment, impetuosity, or imposition. Without that discretion, instead of enriching life, friendship takes away from it." This is often something that we have to talk with our children about. As soon as they start developing a friendship, they have this tendency to want to dominate the friendship, to want to always be in that other friend's life all the time. And so often we have to say, hey, you've got to pull back. And when they don't, we could tell stories of how those friendships have ended on very sour notes. To give another proverb in more vernacular terminology, we could hear the proverb of Benjamin Franklin, who said this: guests like fish stink after 3 days. So that's why we're just a little bit over 3 days, and then we're getting out of the Bowens home so that we don't stink too much. But that's a good rule, you know, and it's interesting. You can even read the Didache, and in the Didache, this early Christian document, it actually gives traveling preachers instructions: don't stay too long in the house that hosts you. They had this wisdom from long ago, and we certainly share it today. But another way that we can have this overbearing spirit is when we ignore others' emotional state and impose our own. Solomon talks about this as well. We ignore the emotional state of others in our relationships, and we just impose our mood, our attitude, our state on others. Consider these proverbs. Proverbs 25, verse 20. Like one who takes off a garment on a cold day, or like vinegar on soda, is he who sings songs to a troubled heart. You know, we can always tell this, you know, when our spouse is going through a rough time and we try to make light of it, thinking that that's the best way to encourage them. That's like vinegar on soda. It boils up. Another proverb is Proverbs 26, verses 18 to 19. Like a madman who throws firebrands, arrows, and death, so is the man who deceives his neighbor and says, "I was only joking." In other words, what he's referring to there is this kind of cleverness of a neighbor who, out of his own humor or whatever he's up to, he's this practical joker and will do things like scare his neighbor or get his neighbor to think something that is wrong, and his neighbor will go out to all extremes to try and protect against oncoming danger, and then the friend says, "Actually, I was just joking." That is the kind of overbearing excess that really damages relationships. Another one is Proverbs 27, verse 14. He who blesses his friend with a loud voice early in the morning, it will be reckoned a curse to him. Real practical wisdom. The loud singing in the morning to the friend who's either not yet up or is not ready for it, hasn't had his coffee yet, that's a curse, right? Proverbs states it very clearly. But on a more serious note, as we think of the emotional state of others, take this quote from Charles Bridges in his commentary on Proverbs. He says this: the tenderness that shows a brother's tears, that knows how to weep with those who weep as members of the same body, and directs the mourner to the mourner's friend and God, this is Christian sympathy, a precious balm for the broken heart. There's a third way that we can be overbearing in our friendships, and this one, exaggerating others' qualities for selfish purposes. Exaggerating others' qualities for selfish purposes. This is flattery. Flattery. And we find this, for example, in Proverbs 26, verse 28. A lying tongue hates those it crushes, and a flattering mouth works ruin. What is the wise man here talking about? He's talking about the person, the friend, who for his own purposes heaps praise upon the other. In other words, he either wants something for himself, or he's setting up his friend for a fall. That's what flattery is. Flattery is heaping on abundant praise that you don't sincerely mean, and you do so to try and get something from the other person. Another proverb here, Proverbs 29, verse 5. A man who flatters his neighbor is spreading a net for his steps. He's setting him up for failure. He's trying to get something, or trying to make him overinflated in his own thoughts about himself, and he's setting him up for failure. Flattery is a form of lying. It exaggerates qualities in order to take advantage. And it does so to take advantage, to get something that a person wants. It's manipulation. Or to set that person up for failure in the eyes of others. And this overbearing, insincere praise for a neighbor is ultimately destructive. A good friend will always ask, not how will this friend benefit me, but how I will benefit this friend. When it comes to the issue of being overbearing, we must always ask that question. Not how will this friend benefit me? How can this friend just be my sounding board? I just want to dump, or I want to just do whatever. I want to sing, or I want to do this, and this friend just needs to listen to me. Rather, a good friend will say, how can I benefit this friend in his current emotional state, in his spiritual condition? How can I benefit him? Number 8, show loyal love. Show loyal love. This is one of the most precious truths about building relationships in the book of Proverbs, and it's certainly close to our hearts. And we can ask the question, what is loyalty? What is loyalty? Well, simply stated, we could say it's this. Loyalty is the ability to stick with a person despite pressure to the contrary. Loyalty is the ability to stick with a person despite pressure to the contrary. Now, it's easy to stick with people who just, you know, they might be really spiritually mature and exhibit all the fruits of charity, and so it's easy to stick with them, or it's easy to stick with the wealthy who may be just giving out, you know, handouts and things like that. But what about sticking with the poor person? What about sticking with a person who doesn't have a lot of emotional resources to give you? Loyalty is that ability to stick with a person despite all these pressures to, say, abandon him or abandon her. Now, this concept of loyalty is a very repeated concept, especially in the Old Testament. And it is the Hebrew word chesed. Chesed. What is chesed? Well, it's difficult in the English language to translate that. We can translate it as loyalty. We can translate it as mercy, kindness. Often we translate it as loving kindness. Loving kindness. It is one of the key perfections of God. God is a loyal God. He is a God of loving kindness. And you can see that as he reveals himself to ancient Israel on Sinai, how this concept of loving kindness comes out, especially to Moses, as he reveals himself to Moses and as he reveals himself more broadly to the people of Israel. He is a God of loyalty. He keeps his word. So when we see this, we can define it this way, that loving kindness is it's not a spontaneous kind of love. It's not an arbitrary kind of love that waxes and wanes like the moon, but it's a love which springs from a commitment to a promise. That's loyalty. It is a commitment to a promise. It is loyal or faithful, a kind of love which keeps on loving despite the unworthiness of the one who is loved. It is the kind of love that endures. Those are the faithful friends. And that's what Solomon in his wisdom is calling us to be in all of our relationships, to be men and women of loyalty. That's what marks the people of God. Consider these Proverbs. Proverbs 3, verses 3 to 4. Do not let kindness, that's the word chesed, you could translate as loyalty. Do not let kindness and truth leave you. Bind them around your neck. Write them on the tablet of your heart so that you will find favor and good repute in the sight of God and man. If you have as your primary characteristics truth and loyalty, you will find good repute and favor in the sight of both God and others. Proverbs 17, verse 17, a friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. A friend loves at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Now, Proverbs 17, verse 17, sometimes is taken as if the friend is closer than the brother in this context. And I don't think that's the best way to look at it. Solomon here is not writing or speaking an antithesis, that a friend is dependable, but a brother causes friction. Rather, he is He is saying this: there is a friend who loves at all times, but then there is a brother who is born to help you through iniquity. That's the essence of loyalty. Not iniquity, adversity, excuse me. A friend loves at all times, but the brother is born to help you through adversity. Now, this may be a physical brother, or it could be a brother. It could be a brother that is a spiritual brother that sticks so close and is there, especially in those moments of pain. Proverbs 19, verse 22, what is desirable in a man is his chesed. What is desirable in a man is his kindness. Proverbs 20, verse 6, many a man proclaims his own chesed, but who can find a trustworthy one? Who can find that friend who is actually, indeed, a man of chesed? Proverbs 25, verse 19, like a bad tooth and an unsteady foot is confidence in a faithless man in a time of trouble. Or Proverbs 27, verse 10, do not forsake your own friend or your father's friend, and do not go to your brother's house in the day of your calamity. Better is a neighbor who is near than a brother who is far away. Now, that's a complex proverb, but focus on that first half. Do not forsake your own friend. Charles Spurgeon, recognizing the difficulty of finding these kinds of friends who are loyal, says this: friendship, however, though very pleasing and exceedingly blessed, has been the curse of the greatest misery to men when it has been unworthy and unfaithful. For just in proportion as a good friend is sweet, a false or unfaithful friend is full of bitterness. Number 9, another important truth here: protect what is revealed in confidence. If we are serious about building strong relationships, we must protect what is revealed in confidence. In fact, this is a repeated refrain in the book of Proverbs. Solomon recognized that as the community draws closer together, that as friendships are formed, there is this proximity that develops, this closeness. But associated with this closeness is an increasing awareness of faults, an increasing awareness of imperfections. It's like looking at someone far away and looking at someone 6 inches away. You don't see the imperfections from a distance. The same way in friendships, if you remain on the outside, you don't see those real imperfections. But as you draw closer in relationship, you begin to see these things. And with that comes increased temptations to gossip. Solomon deals with this. For example, Proverbs 11, verse 9, with his mouth, the godless man destroys his neighbor. The neighbor lives right close to him. So he sees his neighbor's imperfections, all the neighbor's weaknesses. And what does the godless man do? He goes into the rest of the community and says, did you know? Did you know? This is the godless man. Proverbs 11, verses 12 to 13. He who despises his neighbor lacks sense, but a man of understanding keeps silent. He who goes about as a table bearer reveals secrets, but he who is trustworthy conceals a matter. A good friend, a faithful friend, is those who conceals the matter. Again, this is not some scandal, but it is the concealing of these imperfections. Proverbs 13, verse 3, the one who guards his mouth preserves his life. The one who opens wide his lips will come to ruin. Proverbs 17, verse 9, he who conceals a transgression seeks love, but he who repeats a matter separates intimate friends. That's gossip. Now, of course, this does not mean that Solomon is advocating that we turn away from the iniquities that are being committed in the community of faith. Certainly not. He is not calling for us to cover up indiscretions and sins. Rather, we can look elsewhere, and I won't go through these, but over and over again, Solomon and the Proverbs in general call for the rebuke of those who are caught in sin. This is not that we stop practicing the one another's of confrontation and admonishment and counseling. But what Solomon is really after here is he's after the faithfulness of friends who will not gossip about their friends behind others' backs, because that's one of the greatest dangers in all time to the unity of the community of faith. I like what James Denny said here when he said this: every word spoken about a brother's sin that is not prompted by a Christian conscience, that does not vibrate with the love of a Christian heart, is itself a sin against the mercy and the judgment of Christ. Or this quotation from Matthew Henry, it's a longer one. He said this: it is required of us that we be tender of the good name of our brethren. Where we cannot speak well, we had better say nothing than speak evil. We must not take pleasure in making known the faults of others, divulging things that are secret merely to expose them, nor in making more of their known faults than really they deserve. And least of all, in making false stories and spreading things concerning them which they are altogether innocent. What is this but to raise the hatred and encourage the persecutions of the world against those who are engaged in the same interests with ourselves, and therefore with whom we ourselves must stand or fall? Churches that are rife with gossip become the laughing stock of the world, and those churches then are destroyed by the community of outsiders, and everyone in that church who is gossiping about the others, they themselves fall in that great discussion and how or destruction. And how sad is that? Finally, a tenth principle as we close our time, it's this: share God's hatred for strife. If you're going to build healthy relationships, if you're going to build a healthy community of those who have like faith in our God, we must share God's hatred for strife. Strife, which we can define as quarreling and gossip and slander, these things are antithetical to wisdom and are an abomination to God. And he says that much. Consider Proverbs chapter 6, verses 12 to 14. A worthless person, a wicked man, is the one who does these things. Now remember that designation. A wicked, worthless person. It's the person who walks with a perverse mouth, who winks with his eyes, speaking of deception, who signals with his feet, speaking of the path to iniquity, who points with his fingers, who with perversity in his heart continually devises evil. And notice this last one: the wicked, worthless man is the one who spreads strife. The strongest language in the book of Proverbs is certainly directed at all these other things, but it is not withheld from the one who is guilty of spreading strife. Just a few verses later, in chapter 6, verses 16 to 19, we read the six things that the Lord hates, the seventh, which is an abomination to him: haughty eyes, lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that run rapidly to evil, a false witness who utters lies, and notice this last one again: one who spreads strife among brothers. Solomon warned about the serious consequences of strife and identified the wise response to it. He said, for example, in Proverbs 17, verse 14, the beginning of strife is like letting out of water. You can never get it back. Spill a cup over, and no matter what you do, even if it's on a hard surface, you'll never put that water back in the cup. It's gone. The beginning of strife is like letting out water, so abandon the quarrel before it even breaks out. Proverbs 18, verse 19, a brother offended is harder to be won than a strong city, and contentions are like the bars of a citadel. In other words, the strife and the offending of others creates this hardness that is so very difficult later on to try and recover. Proverbs 20, verse 3, keeping away from strife is an honor for a man, but any fool will quarrel. In Proverbs 22, verse 10, drive out the scoffer and contention will go out. Even strife and dishonor will cease. In fact, it's interesting that when we get to the book of Titus in the New Testament, that there is a special kind of church discipline for the one who spreads strife. It goes a lot quicker than the pattern that is laid out in Matthew 18, where there is this measured process of one step, then two step, then three steps, then the fourth. Paul instructs Titus that the man of strife is to be handled much quicker because his destruction within the body of the faithful is so devastating. And Solomon certainly emphasizes that when he says the scoffer, the one who sows strife and dishonor, that one must be driven out. Essential to healthy relationships, in contrast to spreading strife, is to bring peace. This is essential. The men and women in the church, you must be those who sow peace. You must be known as those who bring calm. You must have the reputation that when you enter a tense moment, everyone knows when you come, the temperature in the room goes down. When you enter the conversation, everyone around the table knows, okay, things are going to get better now. When there's people fighting and you show up, they don't try and run from you knowing that it's only going to get worse. Rather, they say, please come help. You can solve this problem together with us. Look at these Proverbs. Proverbs 15, verse 18. A hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but the slow to anger calms a dispute. Rather than spreading strife, our objective as those who are wise and really seek to build relationships must be those who sow calmness, tranquility. Another proverb here is chapter 16, verse 14. Look at this. The fury of a king is like the messengers of death. Now, the king is the highest in the community. But notice what a wise man can do and what a wise man does do. A wise man is able to bring calm even to a king. So think of it in terms of those relationships of authority and those at the top, and they're angry or upset. A wise person, even lower down in the structure, will be able to appease, bring tranquility even to the anger of a boss. And certainly we can quote this text from the mouth of Jesus, who said this, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called the sons of God." And the church must be filled with peacemakers, those who are sons and daughters of God. Well, that is our summary of these principles, and I thank you for your attention. We've gone a little bit over, but let me quickly read through these as we close our time. Recognize your need for relationships. Choose your friends carefully. Pay attention to your words. Practice a give-and-take approach to counsel. Be quick to forgive and to confess. Prioritize listening over speaking. Do not be overbearing. Show loyal love. Protect what is revealed in confidence. Share God's hatred for strife. This is God's wisdom for relationships. And you pursue these 10 things, and I can give you this confidence from the Word of God that you will find success in your relationships. Let's pray towards that end. Heavenly Father, as we reflect on these truths, we are so thankful for your word, which gives us these very clear, poignant truths and principles for an area of our life in which we often find ourselves frustrated. Because of the world of sin in which we live, and because of the folly that is still intertwined in our lives, our own personal lives, relationships do not come easy. So we look to your word, and your word gives us exactly what we need. But ultimately, we acknowledge that apart from a regenerating work of the Spirit in our lives, apart from that gift of grace whereby you reach down and you solve our problem of folly, apart from that, we have no hope. But we are thankful for Jesus, through whom this hope comes. We're thankful for Jesus, who is our best friend, because he died to take away our sin. And so, in all of these things, we ask for your enablement in the name of our cherished friend, your Son, Jesus. Amen.